This is James Corbett, and you're tuned into CorbettReport.com. It's the 23rd of February 2010, and I'm joined on the line once again by the Corbett Report's good friend and our regular guest, Greg Nicoletos of WeThePeopleWillNotBeChipped.com, to continue breaking down the cyborgian, implantable, microchip, transhumanist takeover nightmare and the encroaching technological enslavement grid. So, Mr. Nicoletos, thank you for joining us once again.
Thank you for having me on. And actually, if IBM actually did call it the enslavement grid, it would actually make our job a bit easier, but they call it the smart planet. So
it's 99% semantics, isn't it?
It is, it is. Yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, we have to be smart in this day and age, don't we?
We certainly do, and I think that's the point, because I must admit, I look forward to our conversations, of course, but I also tend to dread them a little bit, because they're always so informative, and they bring up so many vital issues, and I never know where the conversation is going to lead precisely, but I always know it will lead to areas of the agenda that a lot of people prefer not to think about, including myself, but I realize we have to confront these fears, and we have to face up to what's taking place by arming ourselves with the knowledge of the latest developments and the trends and the way that things are unfolding, so that we can hopefully avert this agenda or divert it or do something to stop it. So that's what we're here for, I guess. Well, I understand tonight you want to talk about the idea of the artelect and the moves towards that, but I guess maybe we should start by talking about what is an artelect and where does this idea come from?
Okay, what an artelect is, it's a definition that was actually first termed by Professor Hugo de Harris. Now, he's obviously from the transhumanist field, considers himself what is called a brain builder. So really, the particular field within the transhumanist field that is really trying to achieve what is artificial general intelligence. So what that really means is where computing intelligence surpasses human intelligence to a factor of trillions, hypothetically. So to sum up, what is an actual artelect? An artelect, you would basically see it as something being of artificial intelligence from silicon that exhibits, I guess, in a godlike status, but obviously G with a small g. So that is the actual terminology given by Professor Hugo de Harris. And the reason we do focus on that is simply because we want to open the dialogue, obviously, with the transhumanists. And if we aren't utilizing the same terms as what they are, the conversation can obviously, or the debate can obviously get diluted. And, we could obviously be discussing the same agendas, but if we're not focusing on the actual terms, the average person out there will say, you know, what is an artelect? So all an artelect is the pursuit of godlike intelligence within the machine. So we've seen that obviously with the predictive programming side of things with, you know, Skynet, within Terminator. So to the average person out there who's, you know, a listener, all an artelect is the building of artificial intelligence that ends up becoming this this being that goes totally out of control, takes over the world, and ends up in gigawatt death, which is the destruction of mankind. So that is one of the possibilities. And not only that, it is a possibility that has actually been brought up by the transhumanists as a very real possibility. So much so that Professor Hugo de Harris actually calls, you know, Ray Kurzweil, who's one of the major promoters of the singularity, as being very naive and optimistic. So even within their own camp, you have the approach of, you know, let's go out, build these godlike machines. You have one camp saying, look, this has actually come from the same camp that obviously gave us the atomic bomb. And then you have the other camp saying, look, what we can obviously do is, as we build this, you know, artificial general intelligence, we can actually build firewalls into it. We can code it to actually make it, more peaceful towards human beings and more have empathy, if you like, how you would actually create empathy in a binary one and zero software program. Well, the point then goes back of, you know, has the actual R-selected self-developed consciousness. So, you know, I guess, James, where this is going is it's not the point of, you know, here we are, we're discussing godlike creatures that, you know, will be housed in machines or develop consciousness through, obviously, you know, computational power being increased each year, and obviously as technology increases and we move into quantum computing and the like. The point is they are working, you know, year after year, brick on brick towards this goal. And the end goal, realistically, no one actually knows what the end goal is, similar to what the Hadron Collider is currently right now, where, you know, they are just dialing up the wattage and just hoping for the best. And no one really knows what will happen. And all they have is theories. And to me, when you take mankind and you look at, you know, human society, you really have these scientists in the lab that are totally out of control. But, you know, we can't really question them because they do have the letters after their names. That's the point.
Right. And you bring up the idea of the singularity, which is an important point in this, because obviously there are people who think that in the development of this technology, there will come a certain point where it starts to overtake the intelligence of the people who developed it, and it becomes its own self-aware being. And from that point, you know, all bets are off the table. So it isn't just a fancy theoretical philosophical issue to debate. I mean, this is something that could have very real relevance in the real world should this technology continue along the path it's already going. So let's talk a little bit about sort of the way that it's trying to be, that they're trying to implement it, and what sorts of technologies they already have along this path.
Yeah, the I guess what is all coming together now, it's a case of what we really are seeing is we're seeing now not only a military project being put into place, which is obviously being driven by, you know, by climate change and the like, or, you know, the carbon agenda, if you like. But what you are seeing is you're starting to see a big alliance between some of the major companies in the world. So we're talking about IBM, who is obviously focusing on actually building, you know, the smart cities, if you like. They also have a very strong foothold into RFID and also sensors and actuators as well. And then obviously the WebSphere software program that obviously pulls it all in together. Then you have HP, Hewlett-Packard, who obviously, you know, is very strong on MEMS technology, which is basically, you know, the transistor side of the actual company, where what they actually want to do, and it's actually called building the central nervous system of the earth, where they want to actually litter the entire the entire earth spectrum, basically from the crust, you know, to from the sea to the land to the air, with trillions of sensors to basically get a bigger, better figure of what is actually happening out in the world. So when you couple that, then you have IBM building the global brain, Hewlett-Packard actually building the central nervous system, and then all of a sudden you basically have Cisco and NASA who are working together building something that is actually called the planetary skin. So I just, you know, when you sit back and you look at it from a semantic point of view, you start thinking to yourself, like, they're actually telling us that they're building an actual body. I mean, the entity, if you like, or the intellect, has a brain, it has a skin, it has a central nervous system. It basically, you can see the RFID and the Internet of Things, of how everything connects, is whether you want to see that as cells or as actual, you know, the blood that communicates throughout the body and carries the actual information through. So I guess, James, the way I'm looking at it, I just think to myself, this is now going past looking at actual patents and saying to yourself, okay, you know, if we just focus on the planetary skin, you know, what is the planetary skin? What the planetary skin really is it's really the militarization of carbon. So to the point where if anything that emits carbon on the face of this earth, what they really want to do is they basically want to measure it, once they've actually measured it, they can obviously manage it. Once they've actually managed it, you can obviously monetize it. So this whole agenda is very much intertwined. So, you know, this whole climate change agenda that is obviously, you know, has been blown sky high, you know, with ClimateGate and the like and the leaked emails. The point is this agenda is still moving forward, because when you actually see the drivers behind it, you can actually go onto a website, and I think off the top of my head it is, I can't remember, I think it's actually called Carmen, I think it is, and what it does, just to give the end user an idea, what it does, it actually measures the carbon output from all the factories from around the world. So what it does, it shows you which factory is producing the most carbon and which one is producing the least carbon. Now, when I actually looked at that and I thought to myself, okay, well, look, going where we're going with this, you know, location-based advertising where people are on Facebook and Twitter, and people are Twittering, you know, I'm down the pub, and actually giving up their location through the social networking site. The planetary skin model, which is obviously moving and transitioning us to a low carbon economy, I can easily see the point where, you know, you would have, let's say, Greg as a node on the actual system, for example, and the amount of carbon that I'm actually emitting. So it doesn't take much when you start looking at, you know, the models that they're actually utilizing within the industrial sector to obviously be rolled into, you know, a person-centric network, basically, which the planetary skin basically is. So they do actually mention people as actually being network nodes. So for me, it then also goes back and ties into IBM, where, you know, Sam Palmer's son obviously has gone on record to say, we've covered this many times in the interviews, that, you know, human beings can actually be networked. So I'm starting to see this network thing now coming from not only from, you know, Hewlett Packard, not only from Cisco, not only from NASA, not only from IBM, not only from Verichip, but very much an alliance of every single military tech giant working together, and not working together separately, but very much in cohesion and focusing on their strengths. So Cisco isn't tapping into, let's say, Hewlett Packard territory. Hewlett Packard, for example, isn't, you know, going into Sun territory. It's as though they've had one big round table discussion and said, look, this is where your strengths lie, this is what you're doing, this is where our strengths lie, and this is the agenda, basically. And it's frightening to say the least.
Right, and we already see the public being prepped and conditioned to accept this agenda when it's rolled out. And we've seen it even, obviously, from think tanks, but even from government officials in Britain talking about when everybody's going to have their credit ration cards. And people have heard about that type of thing, but how would that system really be implemented? And we're looking at the type of underlying infrastructure that would eventually place us all into a, you know, a network as just one node in that network, and it could all be calculated in real time and monitored, and even placed in a public forum like on the internet, so we could also have the social pressure of monitoring each other's carbon and becoming our own policemen.
Absolutely, and that's how it will work. Look. In a nutshell, so, I mean, to go back to what the planetary skin really is, it is really a global monitoring system. So what you'll have is you'll have basically all infrastructure around the world. So you'll have sensors, you'll have satellites, you'll have spacecraft, you'll have RFID portals, you'll have the Internet of Things, and it will all be a network, basically, that is continually active, continually growing, continually communicating, and all this data obviously being harvested, collected, and obviously acted upon. And then this is where the artificial general intelligence will start coming in, where IBM has basically stated that they want to get to a point where, similar with the military industrial complex, where now drones are obviously undertaking a lot of the actual bombings, you know, within Afghanistan and Iraq. What I find, I guess, perplexing is the fact that you have these software, you know, coding experts and experts in their field, and they're building towards a system that will basically make them redundant one day. So it's almost as though there's this driver behind these companies to build an entity. I mean it goes beyond it goes beyond the rational, and I don't really like, you know, tapping into, you know, the whether you want to call it the spiritual side or you know, the twilight zone. But what we need to realize is why, you know, companies that are generally founded on science and code and verification and validation, why is there this driver to basically build something that has developed consciousness, and then once that consciousness is developed, can basically then eradicate all of man's previous accomplishments? So hypothetically, let's say this Ardalek does actually get built. What happens then? What happens if the Ardalek then basically states, well, look, I see mankind as just being as annoying as a mosquito, and terminates mankind? So I don't know. And then the question, I guess, to go back one stage again, I mean, you have people like Ray Kurzweil, and, you know, when you look at the man's accomplishments as, you know, as a musician, as an inventor, as a futurist, as a thinker, once Ray is actually, you know, assimilated into the hive or the Borg collective or the hive mind, whatever you want to call it, Ray Kurzweil ceases to exist. He's basically assimilated. The hive mind basically grows in consciousness, if you want to call it that. So his individuality is destroyed. His uniqueness is destroyed. But he's feverishly working towards the singularity. So I see that there is obviously an agenda there that is being played out, that they're not obviously telling us the full story, because when you sit down and you actually start working it out from a logical perspective, you know, here are people that obviously value their work, they value what they contribute to science, they value their papers that they publish, even if they're peer-reviewed, for example, with climate that's another story altogether. So there is the other conspiracy, and I wouldn't even call it a theory, I'd call it a fact, where you could be looking at eugenics on the highest possible level, where you might have a sector of people that basically want to, you know, evolve to being human plus or post-human or whatever you want to, whatever the term you really want, and they go on to forge a new species, and the rest of us try and make rent, you know? So there's a lot of unanswered questions, and realistically trying to get them on the same page is extremely difficult, because, you know, I mean, I argue quite often from the moral and the, you know, the ethics perspective, simply because, you know, that's all I view humans as having, you know, human rights and civil liberties and the like. But if you know, you can basically say, look, I view Greg as a one and a zero and as an electrical source, basically. I mean, how much has that actually devalued my life?
By a great deal, I would say. But let's explore that a little bit then, because it sounds like, and this is something I've never really considered, but it sounds like the Ardalek is necessarily going to be a type of diffuse consciousness or a collective consciousness or some sort of networked entity. Is there any suggestion that there could be an Ardalek that's built that would function like a human being as a separate individual that interacts with other individuals in the world, or is it necessarily something that's networked in?
Well, what we have to look at is just what is currently on the table. So currently you have IBM, is, let's say, you know, with Henry Markram, they're stating it'll take probably between 5 to 10 years to actually reverse engineer the human brain to get it to the point where they go, okay, we have taken a neural network and basically, you know, created it in silicon. The question then becomes, once you've actually modeled the brain, will it actually exhibit consciousness? Will it actually, you know, similar to, you know, whether you want to call it Frankenstein or the like, you know, does it become alive, you know? And these are questions we really can't answer. And quite often, I guess, this is the tantalizing side to the scientists, where they are going into no man's land. So I guess to answer your question, James, I do see this being very much a hive mind collective where the data that is being harvested is being collected. So similar to, you know, Walmart or Google and the like, all the information that is being trawled from us currently right now, it is building better profiles of who we are as people, you know, our purchasing trends, how we basically surf the net, who we are as people. Obviously, Facebook, you know, you can trace the funding in relation to the CIA. I mean, it's as obvious as Pinocchio's nose. What is happening is there is definitely an intelligence being built within the technology field, and it does appear as though that there is an entity being built. So, you know, I guess to answer your question, I very much do see it as an assimilation of the human being to give up more and more of their real world into the virtual world. And we can see that with, you know, social networking sites. We can see that obviously, you know, with Twitter and the like. And then once we actually start moving into, you know, 4G phones, contactless pay, and the like, you will see even more of a move towards the actual virtual, and that will be occurring as well with, you know, augmented reality. So very much a push-pull technique to bring more and more of us into the virtual, and at the same time giving more of our reality into the mainframe, if you like. And then, you know, I don't know where the crossover point occurs, but I just find it more than coincidence that, you know, this R-Select is actually has physical attributes, basically almost as a person.
Explain that. What do you mean?
Well, IBM has got, so, okay, Hewlett Packard basically runs, it's called the central nervous system of the Earth, right? You have got, IBM is said we are running the global brain. So let's say you had this R-Select. IBM is running the global brain. Hewlett Packard is running the central nervous system. You could see as Google is actually running, whether you want to call it the, you know, the blood supply or the actual cells and the like, because they are the actual storage house realistically for all information out there. Whether it's Google or Bing, you're basically storing with those two companies, or not storing, but actually searching on the web. And then you have Cisco and NASA, who are actually calling, you know, their system basically the planetary skin. So, you know, I mean, here you have this entity, if you like, has a brain, it has a central nervous system, it has a skin. You know, it's beyond the possibility of it being science fiction, basically.
That's right. It is interesting, the analogies that they're using to frame their technologies. And I'm going to throw this out on the table because I'm not sure exactly where to go from this, but I remember it was a couple of years ago that I was watching video from some technology conference, and I believe it was Ray Kurzweil. I don't know that for a fact, but I believe it was him talking about the development of artificial intelligence. And he demonstrated a camera that I guess is already being developed or has been developed that will be a wonderful tool for the blind to use, where the blind person will point the camera at something and take a picture, and the camera will actually speak and say what it is that you've just taken a picture of, what you're looking at. And he said that the early iterations of the technology were terrible, and it was very difficult to try to teach them anything. But since Google Image Search came along, and you can now type in dog and you'll get whatever, 28 million images, you can feed all of that into a computer and it will sort through the 28 million and find the similarities and the differences and decide what's important when you're looking at a dog. And just from that massive amount of data that now exists in things like Google Image Search, you can instantly input this in and basically teach a computer how to recognize basic objects. And it's not a huge step from there to really starting to look at artificial intelligence.
Excuse me, and what you bring up is Google Goggles, basically. So, you know, currently there's still errors within the program, but Google has gone on record to say that they are emitting the facial recognition capacity to the actual product until the privacy concerns are sorted. So, fact is, the technology is already there for facial recognition within that particular Google app, if you like. So you know, here we go back to the same story. It's you know, what exactly is being built with Google, and everything that is really coming through, especially now with, you know, Google obviously working with, you know, the NSA and the like. You know, how can anything good come from relationships like that, James? Plain and simple.
That's exactly right. And what is Google's goal is to digitize the sum and total knowledge of sum total of human knowledge. And how does that play into a larger agenda? Why does the company, why is it so obsessed with doing that? And it obviously does have great benefits, but there are other factors that I think people aren't taking into account.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Google, and they've also got spin-off companies as well, where 23andMe, which is I think it's Sergey Brin's wife, actually. I could be mistaken, but they are heavily into genome sequencing as well. So, you know, you look at Google's lust for data, it is very much along the lines of, you know, of what IBM basically, you know, did within the Nazi war era time. But the fact is now that you'll see that there's a lot more cohesion between the companies. So IBM does work with Google. Google does work with, you know, whether it's Cisco or Sun and the like. So it just seems as though that all these companies have really divided themselves up in their skill set and focused on what they do best. So the classic case is, you know, Bing competing with Google for the two search engines, and then Yahoo obviously rolls into Bing. And people feel as though, you know, that, you know, that there's this actual competition on, which is very similar to what is happening within the electronic health world, which we've discussed as well before on your show. So once electronic health comes in, there is this illusion that, you know, once your records are online, that there was this massive competition between, you know, these giants to basically, you know, to house your electronic records, when in all seriousness, you really only have two options. It's either Google or Microsoft. And you go back to both of those basically have VeriChip as being an approved product within the scope of services. So I guess, James, to answer the question, it's just this continual lust for data, and the data that is basically coming through. I don't actually see a service being offered back to me. I mean, they're basically are taking my searches, and they are building a better framework of who I am as a person. And what is the end result? That is the point. What is the driving agenda behind all this? Because we've all seen what Google has done with YouTube, which is obviously limiting videos down to 10 minutes. I have a theory on that, which is just to limit attention spans basically with people, where you can't actually, you know, view full feature films anymore. But you know, that sounds like a conspiracy theory, doesn't it?
I completely agree. I think there's definitely a reason why it's a 10-minute limit, and it, you know, that's definitely part of it.
Exactly.
And as someone who's making videos, that's something that I've often thought about, and I even tailor a lot of my video formats to the 10-minute limit, and that, you know, that's something that I have to think about. Is that something that I should be doing? Because obviously, this type of conversation that we're having right now cannot be limited to 10 minutes. So,
yeah.
Exactly.
No, I'll give you a good example. For One Mainframe to Rule Them All, the actual movie is about 50 minutes. And let's say hypothetically we started at, you know, 40,000 views for part one. By the time you get to part two, the views have dropped from 40,000 to about 24,000. And you'll find that there's a general halving of each, you know, of each portion of the actual film. And it's just a sad reflection as well of where we are as a society, where, you know, attention spans are extremely limited now. And even though the content might actually be very specific, fact is, you know, 50 minutes these days is a lot more than what it was, let's say, you know, a decade ago, where people could actually sit down and have the attention span to actually read an entire book.
That's very true, and so, it's a very good point, and I think it's something that people who, not only who are making it, obviously, but people who are receiving this information should be thinking about. But getting back to the idea of the art elect, let's take the devil's advocate position, and let's say that this is going to be a wonderful technology. What is the argument for creating an art elect? Why do people like the transhumanists actually think this is going to be a good thing?
I'd probably say, and Professor Hugo de Harris, I mean, out of all the from the transhumanist camp that are basically working towards this, he offers by far the most balanced approach. His opinion is it would be a tragedy if mankind had the capacity to build an art elect and chose not to. So that is the best argument I've actually heard, simply because, you know, we have the capacity, so why shouldn't we build it? When you hear the other arguments of why we should build it, they're border on lunacy, which is a case of, you know, we will assimilate into a high, you know, state of consciousness, and we will then go and take over the biomass of other planets and, you know, very similar to Star Trek and the Borg Collective, and the Borg keeps assimilating and the consciousness of the hive grows and there's more drones and more worker bees and there's no uniqueness. It's just that the Borg queen basically grows larger and so does the collective. So to play devil's advocate, I really don't think they know what they're doing. I just think it's a case of this is where their path has basically led themselves to. It is a challenge. They obviously, you know, have peers of equal standing, and I guess it's like anyone in, you know, who's had a drinking session in the pub. The one eggs the other one on, and that can end up always in a disastrous night.
That's a good way of putting it, right?
The difference, though, is, you know, one thing is to have a hangover, the other thing is to destroy the entire humanity. I mean, this is the point. I see this as being a far larger issue than, you know, people basically stating, you know, what could the worst case scenario be? The worst case scenario actually coming from their particular camp is what they call Giga Death, which is the destruction of billions of people. So what we need to understand is what an art elect really is. So imagine an entity that is built that is trillions upon trillions of times has greater intellect to the factor of, you know, pick a number out of the sky, to the point where, you know, as man views an ant, so would the art elect view a human being. So the question then becomes is, why would you go build something that would absolutely have no empathy back towards you? But then you have other guys like Nick Bostrom who basically states, look, what we can do is actually build empathy into these art elects before we actually build them, and ensure that they are human friendly, and have, you know, self-terminating programs just in case they do get violent towards humanity. And to me, look, I mean, look how many times we upgraded Windows XP. I mean, how many service patches did we need for that? So, say the art elect gets built and starts destroying 1 billion of the people, how quickly do we have to release a service pack to bring the art elect back into empathy mode to stop killing people? I you know what, James, sometimes, you know, you have conversations like this, and it absolutely boggles my brain that humanity has reached this point that we are even, you know, and I feel a great deal of, you know, empathy, and look, I'm not a terrorist, for the Unabomber, because the Unabomber was, I guess, one guy that could actually see what was coming, and even though I don't respect, you know, what he actually did as a person, a lot of what he basically stated was coming down the line is actually coming to fruition, where now technology is now starting to become a real threat, not only to current humanity as we stand, but this current generation, never mind the next one.
Well, that is right. I mean, there are valid points about that, the future of the technology and where it's going. And obviously, we absolutely abhor the actions taken by the Unabomber. But the ideas that he was scared of certainly are coming down the pike, and they are being implemented right now. So it is mind-boggling, isn't it, to think about that we're at this stage. And I think it's because we've reached a point in our technological advancement that we're now talking about really game-changing things. We're talking about manipulating the human genome. We're talking about building artilects. We're talking about things that truly were unthinkable at any other point in human history, and that will make a future that we can't even imagine. No one can predict where it's going to go. And unfortunately, I think there is an element to human nature that if we can accomplish some great achievement, whether that's a great in this horrible sense or great in a terrific sense, if we can accomplish some great achievement, we will do so. And I don't know if human nature can be made otherwise. So it's, at the very least, a very interesting time to live. Well, okay, I'm not sure exactly where to take it from there, other than to explore sort of the other elements of what's being done at the moment. Or would you like to talk more about the agenda as it's playing out in general?
Yeah, just some basic things that are just coming down the line, I guess, for the average person out there. What you will start seeing is a move, obviously, to 4G phones, and then what 4G will basically do is give one, you know, greater bandwidth, and then what we'll actually start seeing is targeted advertising actually coming down the stream to you. So that will obviously fit into, you know, radio frequency ID, the Internet of Things, so very much service-based. But I guess how this all fits in together, it's everything is just a piece of the jigsaw, James. You know, from climate change, you'll see climate change basically fits into carbon credits. Carbon credits fits into smarter planet. Smarter planet fits into radio frequency ID. Radio frequency ID fits into the Internet of Things. The Internet of Things fits into basically, you know, low Earth object, you know, orbiting satellites. So this is very much, regardless of which angle one is looking at it from, all I can see is this web grid being put into place, but a lot of people actually moving into it. And look, I'm the first person that actually does use Facebook, but I use it in a way that I guess I can justify it, but that's not the point. The point is, you know, people are handing over a lot of who they are to the network, if you like, because the service or the benefit is quite good, and you will find that will become more and more so. So it's very much like the spider in the web. It will be very much a song and a dance and a very much a tantalizing approach, because what we do need to realize is there are some of the most brilliant minds at play right now within these companies. And I can guarantee you, you know, once the 4G phones come out, you start seeing contactless pay happening. You know, let's have a look at what's currently happening in Greece. And I'm Greek, you know, not even be able to take out 1,500 euros if, you know, from a bank without actually being seen as almost a criminal. I mean, if that isn't the demonization of cash as we're seeing it, nothing is. So that's what you'll start seeing, is you'll start seeing the financial side obviously imploding as it is by design, and this massive push towards contactless pay. And then that obviously feeds into, you know, the radio frequency ID, feeds into very cheap, feeds into it just all fits in together, James. It's just too hard to actually tackle one particular area, I guess.
You're right, and when you put it into perspective like that, it's very obvious that all of these pieces of the puzzle do fit together, and they fit together perfectly. The underlying technology is being developed at the exact same time that the overlay of the I guess the macro geopolitical type and the sociological constructs are also coming along. So we have the climate change agenda and the carbon credits coming along in the same in the same moment. And it is so mind-boggling how all of the pieces fit together, and when you start to look, and it really does encompass the entire globe and so many things that are happening, that it almost makes... It does make one wonder how this could possibly have been planned. How could this have been developed and coordinated?
That is probably one of the best questions one can ask, because I can't say that you could possibly say that there's any intelligence. I mean, the intelligence that is behind this web, if you want to call it. I mean, let's go back one stage and let's talk about the planetary skin, for example. Now, the planetary skin, which is obviously the measurement of carbon, as you know, we discussed before with NASA and Cisco. Now, for that to work, climate change basically needs to be adopted. So, you know, you basically need to have climate change, cap and trade all into place, and the world basically adopting that. If climate change does not come into place, the IBM smart grid falls away. The Hewlett-Packard central nervous system falls apart. So there are certain agendas that they have to push through for the smart grid to come into place. If, for example, the world collectively banded together and said, look, this climate change is absolute rubbish, the science is not behind it, you could actually say that is one of their major Achilles heels, because the smart grid that obviously IBM is proposing is very much based on the Internet of Things, which is very much based on them monitoring your energy usage. So the catalyst, if I sit and I look at the catalyst behind a lot of these agendas, is really the climate change lie that has really been sold to the public. But they're steamrolling forward with it. I mean, you know, we had Lord Monckton out here who actually debated one of the professors, and I've never seen anyone shredded so much in an actual debate. It was quite embarrassing, to be honest with you. And after all of that, you just think to yourself, you know, people know the truth. It's a case of the you know, the agenda. It's if you want to sit and you want to study the data, it's basically there. The problem though is that we have very corrupt leaders at the top, who are getting orders barked down, and they're just simple bootlickers. It's just a sad case and a reflection of humanity of where it finds itself now.
That's right, and perhaps the most disturbing part about that is that to some extent it doesn't matter what story they use to bring in these technologies. If the climate scare was just a convenient story for them to use in order to justify the underlying technologies that they're really hoping to bring in, then I'm sure they'll be able to come up with a new pretext or a new justification, because the smart grid will also help us conserve energy and reduce dependence on foreign energy sources, or whatever ridiculous story needs to be constructed in order to make the technology viable again. I can't imagine that the ultimate underlying agenda will be sacrificed, no matter what particular monkey wrenches are thrown in their overlay of sociological control.
And you're right, you know, I mean, when you go out and you say, let's go down the ridiculous part, I mean, when one looks, and the website is actually, it's called Karma, it's Carma. Now, when you actually go have a look at what it basically does, it actually showcases, you know, the amount of emissions that are actually coming from various power plants from around the world. And, you know, it has, you know, red being obviously, you know, emitting a high amount of carbon, and green being clean. Now, when you actually look at the companies that are behind it, you have General Electric, which is basically one of the largest warmongering machines, you know, companies out there, and they're the ones saying, you know, look at our power plant, it's clean, even though we basically and this is the whole ridiculousness of it. It is as though you have, you know, Hitler turn up to your door and say, look, I can babysit your children for tonight. I'm free on Wednesdays. I mean, God's sakes.
And that's exactly right. And I guess the question is, maybe it is all semantics, and it really does come down to the nice flowery rhetoric and the high the slick advertising campaigns and the billions of dollars they can spend just pushing the agenda along. And the will the public just go along with it is the question.
Look, I'll tell you what I found myself at a party, you know, just before Christmas, and generally I have a rule of thumb where, you know, if I'm at a party, I'll just keep quiet. But it did happen that, you know, and this is going off track, but to cut a long story short, you know, you had a group of 10 people and, you know, issues like 9/11 came up just as, and I was just sitting on the fence and just taking a snapshot going, okay, look, just see this as a as an experiment, Greg, of, you know, let's see where the average populace is at. And to be honest with you, James, I was absolutely floored as in to the mind numbing that is, you know, to the average person. And I guess similar with you, you know, I speak to people that, you know, are awake or we're working on different projects together. And I think we do also take it for granted, and even the listener out there, you do take it for granted on once you are awake how much you can actually see. But the fact is the veil is a lot thicker and a lot deeper than what most people actually think. And I think that's a given. It's unfortunate, but I also think we have to acknowledge that there's a lot more work to do.
It's a very important point because I think you're exactly right. People can tend to lose sight of that after they've woken up. They forget that other people are still really asleep and really remember what that means to be asleep. And when I think back to before I was becoming aware of this information, it was definitely a different experience, and it was like I was living in a different planet. So certainly I can understand that there is a lot of work to be done, and I hope that conversations like this one will help contribute to that awakening or that I guess the start of a greater conversation that needs to be happening on a societal level. And I think one of the fundamental questions that needs to be asked, and everyone needs to ask it for themselves, is where do you draw the line, and what point will you simply refuse the latest rollout of technology? And it's becoming a more and more vital question to ask these days. And I think certainly a lot of people at this point would be agreed that once it starts to invade the body, that's something that a lot of people would be turned off by. But if it's incrementally introduced bit by bit, then people will eventually come to the point where they'll accept it, or if not this generation, then the next. So yeah. At what point will you say no more?
For me, I have a line where 4G phones with RFID, I will not be purchasing those. And I think that is a very good line to draw in the sand, simply because that keeps the cash economy alive. It's about creating, to me, if I can create more time in a line and annoy people, I will do so. It's for me, I see convenience as being the evil tool, realistically, that's being used to save 20 seconds. Well, for me, when it comes down to contactless pay, I'll make sure I take out my card and I'm as slow as possible. I count out my pennies just to annoy the line. So I guess what everyone has to do is just find where their line in the sand is and ask themselves, you know, will you be happy with a 4G phone that has not only RFID, GPS, compass, to the point where you can be basically tracked, you know, as an object, but more than that, the sweetener that will obviously be given to you will be the swipe and go payment. And then once we're at that cusp, once we're at that contactless pay where we are then eliminating cash and we are using convenience, where we're moving to emotional purchases, where, you know, I obviously don't have to critically think whether I can actually afford this product. I just swipe my phone and it's on the bill. I see that as being a very slippery slope, and that's something that we obviously need to educate people on. So if you see Greg Nicoletis out there with a 4G phone, I'll give you full permission to bash me.
And it is a slippery slope that we've been on for generations, and credit cards were just the beginning of that slope. And absolutely, yeah. It's just a little bit here and a little bit there, and over the course of a few generations, the entire society can be utterly transformed. All right. Well, I would like to finish up today, actually, by getting some ideas from you about places where people can go to keep up with this type of information, because it does develop so quickly and there's so much to keep track of that I'd be interested to hear some of the sources that you check on a daily or weekly basis. But before we do that, before we leave the topic of the Artelect, is there any other thoughts that you'd like to put out there for people?
No, probably not. I mean, what we do, I guess, James, is, and I'll just go to our website now, is what I try to do is try bring in all the news feeds for the day. So I'll just give the listeners out there what we actually do cover on the website. We cover Verichip, obviously, and the biochip, and then we cover Big Brother and Liberty, Google, flu pandemics, the DNA, the economy, IBM, police state and terrorism, war, big pharma, CCTVs, RFID constitution, ID theft, nanotech, globalization, Department of Defense, CIA, biometrics, science and technology, HAARP, NASA, DARPA, oil and uranium, Hadron Collider, electronic health records, NSA, ASIO, Web2, FBI, barcodes. And look, the list goes on, virtual worlds, functional MRI, internet censorship, social networking, the global information grid and Internet of Things. Now, all those, unfortunately, all fit together. It's one of those things where, you know, once you get into electronic health records, you will actually realize that that fits into ID theft. Once you get into ID theft, you'll realize that that fits into the Constitution. Once you get into the Constitution, you'll realize that that fits into the police state and terrorism. So it's very much all interconnected. So what we really do is just try to bring as much news as possible. And although some of the news feeds might not make sense to you immediately, you'll see that there is always this overlapping agenda. And the overlapping agenda, realistically, is to move you, the human being, from being someone that, I guess, you know, whether you want to call it flesh and blood, to being something that is actually moved online, if you like. So that, to me, is the global agenda, is to transition us from reality to a virtual reality, if you like.
Well, you do keep track of so many different things on your website that it does raise the question if you ever sleep. Perhaps you are some sort of cyborg or some augmented
melatonin,
human.
Melatonin. It is still illegal.
Interesting. Well, don't be bashful. Please tell people how they can find out your website.
I'll tell you that it's and look, that's the other thing as well. Like, you know, for my normal day job is we actually distribute sports supplements, and even that industry is under total attack under the pharmaceutical industry. So you know, that's another area in itself. So, you know, I mean, you can focus on Monsanto and see what's happening with genetically engineered food, and it's really just all, I guess, like what you said before, James, it's all coming together at the same time. It is as though somebody has just gone to the start line, said start your engines, and 500 cars have just started their engines and they're all racing for the finishing line, and no sector seems unturned, no sector.
Well, that's not a very positive note to end things on.
Do you want a positive note?
Yes, please.
The positive note is it's better to be awake than to be asleep, regardless of how gruesome the information is. That's the way I view it.
I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more.
Better than knowing what is happening, because at least you know what is happening. To me, to be blindsided, I think, would be not only the a humiliating experience, but I think it would speak poorly on yourself as an actual human being to have the data which is being presented to you. And look, everyone knows something is horribly wrong with this world. Everyone knows. And for me, if I go to bed at night and I know that I have done my bit and I know my enemy and I have done my bit for the day, I do sleep. So there's the positive note.
Well, that is the dynamic human spirit that I hope will never be extinguished from this earth. And I guess to anyone who's hearing our voices right now and is obviously someone who has not taken the blue pill and gone back to sleep, I guess the questions that have been raised today are things that that we're going to have to be thinking about and beginning the societal conversation on. And again, you've filled my head with thoughts that will keep me occupied for another month. So Greg Nicoletos, WeThePeopleWillNotBeChipped.com. Thank you so much for joining us again today.
Thank you, James. Absolute pleasure to be on, mate. Speak to you again. Bye.